Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When I write y'all, all across the USC, Compton Watts, Bay to LA, Pomona, California, from valley to valley, we represent that killer county. So if you keeping it real on your side of your town, you tune in to Gangsta Chronicles.
Gangsta Chronicles, we gon' tell you how it goes.
If I lie, my nose will grow like Pinocchio. We gon' tell you the truth and nothing but the truth.
Gangsta Chronicles, this is not your average show.
You're now tuned into the real MCA, Big James, and Big Stale.
This is strictly from the streets.
Hello.
We represent the streets.
Welcome to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast, a production of iHeartRadio and Black Effect Podcast Network. Make sure you download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles. For my Apple users, hit the purple mic on your front screen, subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles, and leave a 5-star rating and comment. We'd like to welcome everyone to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. I'm with my homeboy,
Big James.
Yep, today 8 would not be with us. He's in traffic, but we have him back on the next episode. You know how those 8 out there running around in traffic and everything, but today, we have a sister that wears many hats. She used to work with them sacks and be out there getting her slang on, so her hustle and work ethic is second to none. Not only is she a highly respected comedian, she's a chart-topping author and record-setting actress with her own TV show based on her life, and she has her own Netflix special that's out now. Y'all want to hear something crazy? We got Miss Pat in the house. What's up with you, Miss Pat?
Not a damn thing.
Not a damn thing, huh? I want to tell you, I was sitting up looking at your stuff and you had me laughing like a motherfucker because you're one of those homegirls like this from the neighborhood that's just funny as a motherfucker. You can't out argue them. You can't do none of that. And that reminds me of you right there.
That's me.
Yeah.
You ain't gonna out argue me. I can tell you probably come out better shooting me.
Well, you and James get along fine. Now, I know that you're from Atlanta, Georgia. And what impressed me about you is that you had a child at the age of 15. You went out and hit the corners and started slinging crack. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I had my first child at 14, my second 14. Child at 15.
Okay, yeah. For 14 and 15, so I'm off. My bad, that makes it even more powerful though. Because look where you are today.
Yeah, that's just, you know, young. I grew up in that crack epidemic, so, you know, the streets was everything. That was survival. I had two kids by a married man. And so I was too young to get a job, and he was selling drugs. So once he went to prison, I started selling drugs. And I think I was a lot better at it than him. And so I can tell you this, I made way more money than he did. And I did a couple years, I did a year in prison for selling drugs, got shot a couple times, you know, do what you, the same shit everybody was doing around 1988 to the early 2000.
That was for
you
sure.
You said you got shot a couple of times, like it wasn't no thing.
It ain't now that I survived. It was a thing back then.
Yeah, I heard you say one of your little skits that the second time you're glad you didn't get shot in your nipple because you didn't want lead poisoning or some shit like that.
Well, I got shot in the boob. Yeah, I got shot in the, my right breast with a 45.
So what made you feel like you had to change your life? Getting shot or getting hit by the dump truck?
I have fucking kids to live for.
That's right.
I didn't want my kids to go through what I had went through. So, you know, I figure nobody really gave me a chance. I need to straighten up my shit so I can give my kids a chance. So that's what I did. I started, you know, looking at when I went to jail for that year, that was the only time that was slow in my life. So it gave me an opportunity to really sit down and think about the shit that I was doing. I was shocking myself while I was sitting in jail, like, what the fuck is wrong with me? You know, when you surviving, life passed by fast. You know,
right.
People see you as being crazy or whatever. Deep down inside, all you want to do is survive. And that's what I was doing. I had two kids, dropped out of school in eighth grade. I had to get it. And so that's what I was doing. I was into anything illegal you could think of.
Yeah, so you get out of jail, and you start going on the path to get your life together. What was the first thing you did?
Find me a black man with a job that didn't hit a bitch in the eye on Friday.
Now let's talk about your husband in one second, right? You know, you get out of jail, you're doing your thing, and then at 19, you receive custody of your sister's kids because of her drug addiction. You already got two of your kids on, and you just recently married.
I got my sister's kids. It was four kids at 19, and this man didn't have any kids. So I'm 19, he 21, and he got a bitch with six kids. His mama thought he was fucking crazy.
He stayed down with you. That's a hell of a man.
I'm still with him. It's almost 30 years.
Yeah, that's a hell of a man. That's what I'm saying. Y'all still together. And that's the power, and that's the beautiful thing about a relationship, because you're supposed to hold each other down.
Yeah, you're supposed to hold each other down. And when people tell him, like, why would you stay with somebody who got six kids and ain't none of them yours? Because I think we was together like 8 years before I had my first child by him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he just became a father to everybody. Never complained, you know, other than the first time when he told me, don't get my sister kids. That was the only time he really tried to leave. And I was like, well, I can't choose between you and these babies. And he just stayed around and helped me fucking raise them. And when I became a comedian, I told him, I said, one day I'm gonna have my own show and you ain't gonna have to work no more. And he was like, girl, get your ass out of my face. So he retired about 4 months ago.
That's a beautiful thing. Right. Shout out to him, because we hear so much bad stuff about brothers and their relationships messing up. But when I read that, I was really like, man, that's a good brother right there, because he really held you down. He encouraged you and he pushed you.
Well, yeah, because I had to tell him that too. I said, you know, when things started to take off, I said, do you understand that I probably wouldn't be here had you not let me max out all your credit cards, take your paycheck for a fucking dream? Because it was a dream. Who knew it was going to end up to a TV show, special, you know, real money. I just felt like it was something there. And every time I was like, can you buy me a plane ticket? He was like, you ain't making no fucking money. I said, it's something here. Just believe it. I don't know how long it's going to take, but I'm going to one day make some money from this shit. And he would fuss and, you know, we got bills. But I'm like, fuck the bills. I need to go out here and make these $200. But the plane ticket was $600.
But, you know, sometimes that's necessary in order for the dream to work.
Well, they say dream teamwork make the dream work. So I tell you, this comedy career really rocked my marriage and my relationship. I was gone all the time from the kids, and he was at home. Even after I had his two kids and my sister came back and got her kids, I was never really there because I was out here trying to grind for a career. And, you know, after he realized I was serious about it, he never really complained.
That's real dope. That's real dope. You know, I think we all have those moments in our career that kind of encourage us to keep going on. I remember mine was, I was in the studio with Sugar Free, and I did this song for him, made a beat for him, and the guy gave me $1,000 that night. And you know, it was just $1,000, but I came home and I showed my wife, because I've been going to these studios and been making beats for people for years, and it would usually wind up somebody would take my shit and claim it themselves, you know what I mean? And I would never get no money, no credit. But I brought that money home and it seemed like it was reward. I said, we own now. I said, these motherfuckers don't actually pay me $1,000 for a beat. Now that ain't shit, you know what I mean? But when they did that, what was your moment?
In comedy? My moment was when I went to go open for Cat Williams. And we had just moved to Indiana from Atlanta. And I think my husband thought I was going to kind of quit because I was no longer in Atlanta. And he felt like I didn't have all those clubs to go to. And he thought maybe she's just going to settle down and let this comedy shit go. And I think about 2 years into living in Indiana, he called me. I got a call from Cat Williams to come open for him. Mm-hmm. And I literally got paid $5,000 a show. And I think it was at that moment, for $5,000 for 15 minutes, my husband said, well, maybe it's some money in this shit. Because that was my biggest payday. You know, I was running around opening for people $600, not really real money, sometimes just breaking even. And when Cat called and I went on that Cat Apocalypse tour, I think that's when my husband, it kicked in him to say, this bitch might have a career.
That's dope right there. That's dope. So Cat Williams, he gave you that break right there.
Well, that was the first real money that I had made. Mm-hmm. You know, I was getting like $600-$800 here and there, nothing real. And, you know, and that wasn't just no one-time $5,000. I think it was a 15-city tour, a 20-city tour.
And I was so you came up.
Yeah, I had just talked to my husband about buying a house in Indiana, and he swore it was out of our means. And I'm like, look, dude, we paid $1,600 for an apartment. We could pay this for a house. And the house was only like, I think it was $280,000. And our house we moved out of was like 100 and something. I mean, like 70 something. So that was like way out of his league, just one income. And he couldn't get it. And I'm like, just trust me, we can do this. And Cat Williams called, and we got that. We started making that money. I was able to pay for shit in the basement that we couldn't afford. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I was like, see, I told you something here. And then I just kept grinding because, you know, shit went back to normal after I left Cat. I started opening for D-Ray. I was opening for RNSJ. It was hard. You know, if you're in the industry, it's hard to get a manager and an agent. Mm-hmm. But I just told him, I said, if you just keep supporting me, it's something here. And he eventually cracked. But I'm the type of person that I don't start nothing with, I kind of know if something is there for me. Mm-hmm. So I try to finish everything I do. You know how, because comedy, entertainment will make you give the fuck up. You got to be strong for entertainment. Motherfuckers tell you no, they steal from you, backstabbing. I mean, it's the most dirt, other than prostitution, it's the most dirtiest shit you can do.
I think that's every business though. Like anything that's worth having, because you know, another thing too, because people don't look at which, like if you're in the comedy, if you're in the acting, if you're in a podcast, anything that's other than a regular job, people kind of look at it like, well, you getting paid a lot of money and you ain't got to do shit. It's like bullshit. This is harder than any job I've ever had.
Yeah.
Everything is a struggle though. Everything is a struggle.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, and if you believe in it, you got to keep working harder. And everybody ain't going to understand it. Let me tell you something. My husband did not understand this comedy shit. He did not understand it. And I was like, if you just listen to me, I'm telling you something there. And, you know, when the TV show came out last year and it fucking came out, just bust out. And we ended up getting the second season. And then I just told him, I said, hey, I know you got another few years before you can retire, but you can retire early. He looked at me like I was fucking crazy. I'm like, dude, I got you. We straight.
And you went and did it. Now, let's talk about the Miss Pat show, because I think that's dope because it's based on your life. Yeah. How did that come about?
Actually, it came about through a podcast. I did a Marc Maron podcast. Mm-hmm. And back when, like, many people wasn't even in the podcast, especially Black folk. I don't think you could find a Black podcast back when I was doing Marc Maron and Joe Rogan in the very beginning.
Yeah, them dudes is OGs.
Yeah, so I did his podcast and he released it, and I was in the middle of pitching a book. I have a book called Rabbit, an autobiography, and he dropped that podcast, and I got like 6 calls to come to Hollywood, and I'm talking to different studios and stuff, and one of them was a Ron Howard studio called Imagine with Brian Grazer. At the time, they had just, it was the first season of Empire, and things didn't work out, and then I ended up coming back. And Lee Daniels was like, I want to give a Black woman a show. And so they brought, a producer heard me on a podcast and brought me to Lee Daniels. And it took 5 years.
Yes, yeah, ideal sometimes. Sometimes it takes 5 years. And you know, I not believe in those blessings from God. I really believe in the power of prayer. And I think sometimes God will take you two things just to test your faith kind of.
Yeah, and sometimes to give you a story, because I was like, how the hell I get to go through all of this crap and be able to laugh at? Never would have thought I saw all of these stories that we're doing there on the show. It's things I've been through in life. Mm-hmm. You know, like when the first season come out, they was like, what the hell this sitcom come from? This shit like, you know, like a real Black mama, like a real mama. They talking, they having real conversations. You know, when you close your door, you're not having no fucking cookie crumb conversation. You say what the hell you feel. And that's what we do on the Miss Pat show.
That's right. Real. That's real. One thing I was going to ask you. Now, you making money. Y'all, I'm pretty sure your crib laid out. Y'all ain't struggling and everything. How do your kids react to all this? Because they didn't have to go through the struggle that you went through. How is your kids acting?
I have 4 kids. So I have a set of, I call them Medicaid kids and Blue Cross Blue Shield kids. The Medicaid kids so dope with me. All the dope was in their pamper. Now the Blue Cross Blue Shield kids, oh, they ain't went through no fucking struggles. Ain't nobody stuck no thumbs on their ass. Ain't nobody pre-kidnap them. They had it good. You know what? Most time parents are proud of their kids. I would say this, my kids are really proud of me, you know, especially my first kid, because they know the struggle that I went through as a young mom, you know, dropping out in the 8th grade, trying to survive with 2 kids by a married man, and even my second set of kids, you know, to see their mom, you know, because I did a lot of neglecting to the second set of kids with this fucking comedy career thing, always on the road, but, you know, they always tell me how proud they are of me, and they always been the reason why I pushed so hard to get where I'm at today is my immediate family. So they're proud.
Now,
let me ask you this. How important is it education, fathers being on the show, having your own show and all of that? I mean, did you go back and get your education and in between time?
I went back and got a GED. My daughter, I have a daughter. Two of my daughters went to college, and my other daughter, I think she got like 2-3 degrees. I was like, look here, no more fucking degrees. Let's go write these shows. It's way more money, and you ain't got to listen to that bullshit. Come work for y'all.
but that's what we do.
One of my daughter is a writer on the show.
That's dope.
Yeah, other daughter does makeup, and then my son does something else. So it's a family thing around here. So, you know, the greatest part about all of this, I always told my kids, you know, one thing I learned about raising kids so hard, you can't push kids into something that they don't want. And a lot of time, as this country say, they tell you, you got to go to college. I said, no, sometimes you can make just as much money with the talent that's in your heart than a motherfucker who went and got a college degree.
Exactly.
I said, so, do what makes you happy. And, you know, one of my daughter does makeup. That's what the fuck make her happy. So I always told my kids, you don't owe me shit but a high school diploma, because I never got one. I got a GED. And all four of them graduated. So I feel like, hey, I'm complete. These motherfuckers didn't drop out. They're not criminals like me. They're not convicted felons. I don't have no problems out of them. They totally opposite than the way I was raised.
Yeah, it is. And that's one thing about being a convicted felon. You know, when you were Black, a female, and have a felony on your record, it's almost impossible to put together a decent life unless you go into entertainment or some other field that's outside the normal realm of doing things. You know, with your background, do you talk to a lot of other women that were in your similar position?
Not unless they're in the comedy audience.
But you're probably an inspiration to a whole bunch of people that are presently going through the situation that you were in before. They may be young women that have kids, and they may have a lot of talent, but they may figure, because they got, okay, I got these kids now, the daddy ain't about shit, so I have to do this, so my life is over with. What would you tell those sisters?
I mean, I tell people, you know, man or woman, you gotta believe in nobody's gonna believe in you like you believe in yourself. So, you know, nothing wrong with getting knocked down. The problem comes when you don't get up. Mm-hmm. You know, I always tell people, my biggest thing I live by, I can't dwell on shit I don't have control over. What you crying for? Get the fuck up. One of the biggest, I tell people all the time, one of the songs I listened to the most was by Outkast. Get up and get out and get something. Don't let the days of your life pass you by. Mm-hmm. You know, when you whining about what a motherfucker did to you, you wasting time. You know, time is precious. I mean, I had a friend who would still be crying about somebody shot her, or still be crying about shit happened to her 10 years ago. I'm like, well, when you gonna let that shit go and move on? You don't shed your tears when that shit happened. What you gonna do about today, bitch? Okay, you can't just keep on letting the past hold you down. And I don't rock like that. You know, people like, you fine. I laugh at every fucking thing. You know, I don't give a fuck how you treated me. Look at me now. You know, you keep on talking about what a motherfucker did to you in 88. So what? That shit is old. What a motherfucker did to you yesterday is old. What you gonna do today? You gonna let yesterday hinder today? Not me. I'm going to get it.
That's real shit right there.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, my name's Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. I just had a great conversation with Michael B. Jordan, and you can listen to it right now. Michael is known for his performances in both film and television. His breakout role was in Fruitvale Station, playing Oscar Grant, which earned him widespread praise and numerous award nominations. His portrayal of Killmonger in Marvel's Black Panther, one of my favorites, further solidified his status as one of Hollywood's leading actors, earning him widespread acclaim for his complex and compelling performance. In our conversation, Michael really opens up. You're going to love listening to it, and I can't wait for you to check it out.
The closest to getting what you want is always the hardest. It's always the feeling when you're getting ready to, you know, people give up right before they get what they've always wanted to get. People quit.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Miss Pat, you seem like the homegirl. Like, you seem just like one of the homegirls from around the way. Now, tell me this. How much love do you get back in the hometown of Atlanta?
Oh, Atlanta loves me. I'm on the morning show at V103 here with Big Tigger. And it's, you know, this is my city. I worked really hard to get back here. And we just recently, hold on for a second, shut up. I got kids.
I love it. That's, you know what I was going to tell you. You and James is the two realest people in the entertainment, because James' grandson, I'm surprised Lionel ain't bought his badass out here yet. Because we'd be in the middle of a show. I don't care if it's Shaq on that motherfucker or whoever. Lionel will come out there and jump right in the middle of the thing. James, if you don't take your ass back in the thing, because James raises his grandson.
I gave him his toys, his phone back today, so I can do this without him bothering me.
So How old is he?
5.
I have a custom. I have my niece 4 kids. This is my third set of kids I've raised, but there is 4 of them, and I've had them now for almost 9 years. Be quiet. And so my kids are grown. My youngest is 21. I think these kids are 9, 18, and 12, and 13. Been able to run in their fucking mouth when I told them I'm about to podcast, shut the fuck up. So if you see me throwing shit, don't call nobody.
We don't have the moments on the show where James would throw some shit. I also seen Lionel throw some shit at James' ass too, though.
Right.
That's the funny thing about it. He damn should try you. How important is it, because they live in a good life now? They live in a good life. You know, how important is it for you to convey to them to still keep a little bit of that drive and hunger in them since they're young and not spoil them and making them work for stuff? How important is that?
You talking about these kids or my grown kids?
Not the grown ones, but the young ones, the babies.
Well, I tell them all the time, don't nobody owe you shit. Even the grown ones. I tell them, I say, you only going to get... You get out of life what you put into life. So, you know, I will say these here kind of a little spoiled. I always call these right here the blessed crack babies. I said, you motherfucker came along with auntie a little bit more money. Y'all motherfucker can go to private school. Y'all don't eat no bologna sandwich. But, you know, I haven't really talked to them about life because they're young. But my other kids, my older kids, I always tell them, you know, you got to stay focused on what you want. And don't even worry about what else is going on in the world. I don't worry about nobody but Miss Motherfucking Pat. I don't have time to see who's showing their ass on Instagram. I don't know who done got killed. I don't know what the fuck is going on, because I'm focused on what I'm the fucking focused on.
It's real.
You know, I work for V103, and that's the most I've ever heard about pop culture in my fucking life. I didn't even know half the music. I didn't know half the music was out, because I stay focused on me.
Well, that's why you're successful, and that's what I tell people. I don't have time to know who's talking about me or who's talking about James or who's talking about this and that, because I'm so busy doing what I have to do to stay on top of my game, I don't have no time to worry about nobody else.
And I'm grown too. You know, I'm almost 50 years old. I'm 50 years old this year. I don't got time for that petty shit. I don't got time to be looking. I don't have time for it. I don't give a fuck how much Kanye won't Kim back. I'm worried about my own fucking relationship. I've been married 30 something years. This motherfucker snore every night. I'm trying to figure out how can I turn this nigga on the right side so he can stop fucking up my eardrum.
Let me ask you this, Miss Pat. What is it about y'all women that want to turn a motherfucker over all the time when he's snoring? I wake up sometimes and my wife be pushing me. I'm like, because when you snoring, you don't know you snoring. And she'd be pushing me like this. What's up with that?
Nobody want to hear that shit. I can't sleep. I can only watch so many TikTok videos. Shut the fuck up. And you know, you motherfucker be snoring and air coming out of other ends too. And you don't know what you over there doing. I don't hear that shit.
That's real shit. Now, let me ask you this question, because I think everybody on this call has went through this. This is what comes with success, and this is the hard part. You have some family members that may have supported you on your mission and your, you know, acceleration as you accelerated towards your path, towards your goal. But you have other people that sat back and might have talked shit behind your back or whatever. And those are the first ones, as soon as you get some money, let me borrow.
Let you borrow. Bank of America. I'm not Chase. I don't do loans. I don't let you borrow a motherfucking thing. If it don't come with your Social Security number, you're not qualified to get it. I just tell my friend, I don't have it. Because we're not going to get into that, let me borrow. Then I got to chase your motherfucking ass down. If I give it, I give it from the count of my heart. But right. The kindness of my heart. I'm not going to be out here giving you my motherfucking money, because in the end of the day, I'm hindering you. We all got to go work for what we want. So I tell them, I'm not giving you shit. No, I don't do it. But I've never been the type of person that bite my tongue. I'm going to say what the fuck I got to say. I don't give a fuck if it's a Barack Obama. If I don't want to do it, I'm going to tell you I don't want to do it. I'm not going to pussyfoot. So I tell them straight up, no, fuck you.
Yeah, because with family, and they're the worst. You know, I got a son that's about to go into the NFL. And I tell him that all the time. I tell him, you know, you don't owe me shit. I did what I was supposed to do as a daddy to get you in a position that you was in to help you out, but you wouldn't have did the work. You don't owe me nothing. And I think that's the hardest thing, especially with our people, because we love our families. We love our mama, our daddy, our uncles, and everything. But those are the people, if you let them, they will have your ass broke.
Shit, chair to have you broke. They'll come with every sob story. And they've tried. Like, I'll give you an example. My sister, right? My sister still have system abuse problems. And people are like, why don't you go over there and help your sister? I can't help no motherfucking crackhead. That bitch been smoking that shit since 88 in them biking shorts, looking like salt and pepper. I push it real good. What the fuck am I going to do with her? The fuck are you talking about? I can't help a bitch who been doing this shit for over 35 years. That's what the fuck she want to do. So let her do what she want to do. And I tell people all the time, I say, one thing you can say about crack, it fucked up the black community, but it don't kill. It might make you suck a dick for $2, but I ain't never seen a nigga OD on crack. So she'll be all right.
It's different for you because you his father. And to reap the rewards of your son's success, that's what it's supposed to be. And don't pass up your blessings because your son want to do for him, for his dad and his mom. So it's totally different than outside family. You raised your son, all your kids is good. So you did what you were supposed to do. So everything that he want to give and how he want to treat his mom and the things he want to see y'all with, man, that's a blessing.
Yeah, you know, and see, it is a blessing, James, but at the same time, now, if Chris want to go buy me a truck after he got his shit straight, I ain't going to turn it down. You know what I mean? I'm going to say, thank you, Jesus. But at the same token, I just put in his head like, son, I'm not expecting nothing from you. All I want you to do is take care of business. That's all. I just don't want to see you because the NFL stands for not for long. You don't know how long you're going to be there.
Goddamn right.
You don't know how long you're going to be there. So I don't want to see him become one of those young men that when he's not playing up more, where he don't have shit. Because a lot of those guys don't have shit behind their families, behind buying mama that house. It's cool if you bought mom's the house, but then you buy your sister one. Now your auntie coming. Now your cousin coming. Everybody got a problem. And what I had to learn to tell motherfuckers was this, Pat, because I was a kind-hearted motherfucker until I looked up and realized I had about 75 bands out there in the street that wasn't ever coming back. And my money started running low. I realized right then I started telling people no. No is the most powerful motherfucking word in the dictionary.
Hey, and it ain't the K-N-O-W. It's the N fucking O.
N-O, no. No.
Fuck the K-N-O-W. That's what people with college degree. I tell them no like a nigga. No, nigga. No. I ain't gonna do it. I'm not gonna fucking do it. Because you know what? You work hard. And, you know, I say this all the time. I said people have a tendency of latching on to you. And black folks think when you go up, the whole fucking family go up. It don't work like that. It don't work. I cannot help you. Because if I help you, I ain't going to have. So what the fuck am I going to have in the end? Well, bitch, you was living before I even got this. If you ain't fix your shit and I fix my shit, we going to have to meet up at barbecues and family reunions.
Yeah, some real shit. Now, let me ask you, because right now, you got some incredible shit going on. Y'all want to hear something crazy. How did that come about?
I was in Canada and the lady from Netflix walked up and said, we want to give you a Netflix special. And I was like, oh, okay, great. And the pandemic hit, which gave me more time to work it out. And I was sitting there working it out for a year and a half, and I just started thinking of, you know, who could produce it, who could direct it. And I went to one of the sites and they jumped on board as producing it. But I wanted somebody legendary to direct it. And I want to ask Robert Townsend, will he direct it? And they was like, bitch, he's not going to do it. You know, he only did Raw for Eddie Murphy. He did one for Bill Cosby. And I was like, how fucking cool would that if I could be the third one? And Robert didn't really know me. And he was too busy. But I knew in my heart that I wanted him to do it. And after I met him and I talked to him, because we talked about him directing, but he didn't have time to direct my show. And he kind of turned me down. But I remember sitting in the car when the answer came through and he said, no, he don't have time. And I said to myself, bitch, I didn't call him no bitch. I said, you ain't gonna say no to me. I'm gonna find somebody in Hollywood to make you say yeah, or ask you again. So I picked up the phone and I called Debbie. And I'm in tears. And I was like, I really want him to direct my podcast. I mean, I really want him to direct my special. I said, I just think it'd be legit. I just think he would help me so much. This is my first hour special and I want it to be good. And Debbie picked up the phone and had a conversation with her. I don't know what the fuck she said, but she called me back and she said, oh, he gonna do it.
Ain't that crazy how relationships work?
Wow.
Yeah, because she directed the pilot to the Miss Pat show. Mm-hmm. And Robert came on, and I'm going to tell you something. It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. When I tell you, it was hard. Like, I had to meet with Robert Townsend on Zoom once or twice a week for 3-4 hours. I think it was once a week for 4 hours a day. And we had to rehearse that special. We trimmed it. He pushed it. We twisted. And I was like, oh, my God. While I'm traveling out doing the jokes, I had to send him a video. He studied it. Call you back and say, I need you to do this, and we need to do this, and what you think about this. And I was like, oh, my God, this shit is hard.
Yeah, you know, becoming the top person in your profession is very hard.
Yeah, and he put me to work, not for 1 month. I think we did this for like 6-7 months after he signed on to the project. And he did not play with me. And I thank him for that every day because, you know, let's be honest, people really don't like female comedians. They say that's all we talk about is dick and, you know, shit like that. Well, I've been through a lot, and I talked about he really helped pull those stories out of me, how I grew up, how I got baptized, you know, all the shit that I went through in life. He really helped me put that shit together in that hour special.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I heard you mention the baptism. Your mom had a hell of a hustle going on back in the day.
My mama had a lot of fucking hustle. She was a single parent of 5 kids.
Mm-hmm. But she got it going. She was not robbing and stealing from nobody, but she'd been baptized 50 times.
25. She would 25. Take us on Sundays and sign us up. And as soon as them people get that check, she'd be like, y'all need to get the fuck up out of here. And I hated it too. I'm sick of this shit.
Yeah. That's one thing I noticed, you know, in your act, that you relay a lot of your own personal experiences. In a way, it's kind of comedy, like your therapy.
Hold on for a second. Be the fuck quiet. I'm sorry. it is therapy for me. You know, I opened a lot of doors with comedy. And it was, you know how we are, Black folk, we don't want to counsel. And we think, you know, holding it in, the tougher we are. But the more I told these stories, the more I realized I'm not the only person out there that went through this stuff, from molestation to abuse to just growing up in poverty. You know, and the stories I tell is so relatable to not just Black people, all fucking races. Mm-hmm. And so it really helped me a lot, standing on stage, telling these stories to people. And it also made people realize they don't have to be ashamed of what you've been through in life or what you, where you come from in life. It's okay to laugh about it. It's okay to talk about it.
Yeah, and I think that's very important because, like you said, in the Black community, if you hear about someone going to therapy, they usually get ridiculed. Usually talk shit. That motherfucker is crazy.
Dude, I ain't heard that word ridiculed in so motherfucking long.
Hell yeah. They gonna get ridiculed. They gonna get talked about. They gonna get clowned. That motherfucker is crazy.
That's if a you old tell, ass word right now. Ridiculed. Yeah.
If you tell somebody you're going to therapy, I was talking to James about therapy one day, and he said, what the fuck do I need to go sit down and talk to some white person about my problems that don't know shit about what I'm going through? He said, right. Last time I talked to one of them motherfuckers, they let my daddy whoop my ass some more. tell her that story real quick, James.
Well, going to therapy, you got these people that don't know you from Adam, and then they want to ask you questions. They want to tell you what you're going through. You're not going home with me. You're not listening to me. I'm telling you what my father is. I'm telling you how my mother is. I'm telling you what I wake up to. They don't give you a solution. They didn't give me that. So I'd never believed that anybody, not only white people, but the majority of them in that field are white. So you can't tell me nothing. So why listen to a therapist when they don't fix anything? So I don't believe now, that.
I can tell you this. Y'all be quiet. I can tell you this. That shit works. I used to say the same thing until I had to go there for my marriage. And that shit gave me a totally different outlook. Yeah, I'm telling you, I went to, he was Black, and that motherfucker fixed my marriage. He was able to answer a lot of questions and get a lot out of my husband as a Black man that you guys do y'all whole thing. Like, I had no idea my husband was feeling the way he was feeling, you know, about my success and the thing that we you know, how he felt about me leaving all the time, how he felt like he got to the point where the bigger my career got, the less he thought I needed him. And I'm like, nigga, I've been out here grinding on your credit cards for the last 20 years. What the fuck you mean? I don't need you no more. You gonna prepare a bed and then let another motherfucker come in and get in? Is you crazy? But it really helped to see my husband open up to this Black man who was a counselor. And I learned a lot too, because you know, as Black women, we ready to fight. What the fuck you talking about, motherfucker? You can't talk to your Black man like that because the world is already beating him across the head. And then you come home and you got this loudmouth bitch like me want to yap, yap up at the mouth and help beat you down. I learned not to talk to my husband like that by going to counseling.
That's a beautiful thing, because the thing is, I can see how a man, and it ain't a feeling of being threatened, but it's a feeling of thing to where he used to being that nigga for you. He used to being like, I'm going to give you my credit card to go do this and do that. Now that's not there no more. So he probably was feeling some kind of way.
Yeah, he was definitely feeling that kind of way, but I didn't know that. To the point where he was like, I'm just waiting on you to leave me. I'm like, what the fuck you mean? I didn't know we were breaking up. I'm out here trying to get it, nigga, so you can retire. You got it playing and we leave. And I'm like, I didn't feel that way. But it was that counselor was able to open doors that I couldn't open in my husband's life.
That's dope. See, James, I told you, man, go get your ass some therapy, man.
No. I truly believe if you're not strong enough to like fix your situation, then I don't see myself going to somebody else, a counselor. I don't see that. I just can't do that.
Have you watched my show, James? Have you watched my show?
No, not yet. With Norm Summey, I've watched that.
You should watch the Miss Pat show. It's on Paramount.
Say hi, Miss Pat. Hi.
Hey, sweet. Oh my God, he's so cute.
Okay, bye.
But you
don't
should.
Tell I'm a bad nigga, that Pat.
You should really, you know, I think it was a counseling episode for my husband on the show. And it was everything we do on the show is like really touches home with it. We don't write an episode without it touching people or it's about a real situation to open your mind. Like I have a gay daughter. My other daughter brought home a kid that called what are they called? Non-binary. I had no idea what non-binary was. So I did a whole episode on it and was able to educate the people who watched the show about people when they're different in our lives. So we did an episode on counseling because I really went to counseling with my husband. And you talking about a tough bitch being shot for his checks from the street. I never thought sitting down telling another motherfucker other than my girlfriend on the phone would help. But it really fucking helped. And I'm a hard bitch. It take a lot to make me cry. If I cry, I'm probably gonna slap the shit out you. Cause that means you dug a hole somewhere that you weren't supposed to be digging.
Right.
It will free you. It really will.
Yeah. I went to therapy when I was 16 and it did a lot for my life. It did a lot for my life. It was some good shit. And you got a podcast yourself.
Yeah, my podcast is called The Pat Down.
The Pat Down. And it's some good shit, James. You got to go check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
You got to go check it out. What made you decide to get into the podcast game?
Podcast launched my career, along with Joe Rogan and Mark Maron and all those other, Bert Kreischer and Tom Segura, all of those guys. So it really boosts my career. And, you know, one thing about Joe, he's always trying to push the next set of comedian. And he just kept telling me, you need a podcast. Oh, I'm going to tie for that shit. You know, I don't want, what am I talk about? And so he just said, Pat, you need to launch a podcast. And then you need to come back here and I launch it on my platform. And so I just decided to give it a try. And I fucking ended up falling in love with it. And I have three so co-hosts with Dion and Chris. And we talk about every fucking thing. And the fan base is very mixed. So, you know, it's three different points of view on this podcast that's, you know, people really appreciate, and nothing is off limit. Nothing.
Yeah, I'm about to, and you're doing that independence yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what? I need to talk to Dolly over here at Black Effect. You need to be over here with us because your shit funny as hell. That's what I like about this. It's real. You know what I mean? It's real. And y'all talking about everything. Like, I really like your breakdown, your answer to Joe Rogan. You know how they came out with the shit from 20 years ago or some shit where they cut it up and made it like he was prejudiced? And I said, now, this man don't have too many niggas on this show. He ain't prejudiced. This nigga had Willie D and Miss Pat in this show. He ain't prejudiced at all.
Well, Joe Rogan also has, when all of that came out, everybody pulled up his stepdaughter, which she's biracial by his current wife. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, Joe Rogan is not. When you have to be careful because it's so easy. And I learned this from shooting TV. It's called, where they take words and they drop them in your mouth. Mm-hmm. I can't think of what it's called, but I had never seen this shit until I started taping my TV show and they was like, I just need you to do a voiceover. We're going to drop it in your mouth. I'm like, what the fuck? So when all of that shit came out with Joe Rogan and people were like, what do you think, Miss Pat? I said, I think he's a nice guy. And I think y'all put together a bunch of bullshit and he apologized. He wasn't calling no black person a nigga. They was having a conversation about the word. Mm-hmm. So it's totally different than a motherfucker calling you a nigga in your face at Walmart. That's something I don't think Joe Rogan will ever do.
Yeah, they took that all out of context. They took that way out of context.
He's a good, to me, he's a good guy. I ain't never been nothing but a good guy. And I just stayed out of it. I said, people, you know, y'all gonna take whatever y'all gonna do and run with it. So do you. I support Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan is my friend. It will continue to be my friend. And I don't give a fuck what nobody say. There was a conversation about the word. He didn't call nobody in their face no nigga. You know what I'm saying? Because that's not how he felt. And that's not, I know the man character. And I just left it alone. I don't get in that bullshit. Y'all gonna do what y'all do anyway to get clicks. So do you and leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah, and we really in that era. Now, I know you notice it with podcasting. I tell James all the time, I say, man, why is it when we giving people them real jewels, some real shit, it do cool, it does cool. But if it's some nigga shit we on, some bullshit, it's through the roof right now. So we need more people out there telling real stories and doing real shit.
Well, that's what it's all about. I mean, look, that's what it's all about. I don't have time to be playing. I'm old. I don't have time to play the young bitches game. I stay in my lane, okay? My shit, I tell old bitches, sit down. Your shit was over when they stopped, when they closed down all the skating rings. That's when I was a shit, when the skating rings was around.
Yes, yes. So are you back in Atlanta now? You back in Atlanta. So you say you on V103?
Yeah, I just moved back to Atlanta. And I shoot the TV show here in Atlanta.
That's dope. I'm about to come down to Atlanta. I'm moving to Atlanta. My mama's down there. I love the ATL.
Man, this is my motherfucking city. I love my city and I love my whack ass Falcons. Can't nobody say they whack for me. But
yeah, it is.
I love my city.
Well, you know, one thing I do like about Atlanta, when I went down there, and every time I go down there, I'm amazed because you go to a soul food restaurant, and I love other people. I'm not prejudiced against no motherfucking body. I like everybody who like me. But when I go to a soul food restaurant, I want to see some women that look like my mama back there in them pots. You know what I mean? I get that in Atlanta. Just like if I go to a Mexican restaurant to get me some tacos, I want to see somebody authentic back there. I don't want to see, if I go to a Mexican restaurant and I see a nigga back there making some tacos, I'm going to be mad at the motherfucker. I'm walking out.
Me too. I want to see.
You to speak English. I want you to be que paso. You know what I mean? I want a real motherfucker. I want the experience.
Well, and that's what you get here in Atlanta too. I mean, it's such a nightlife here. It's a good place. It's good, definitely a good place for Black people.
Yeah, for sure. But we go. I want to put your podcast out there some, because I think it's brilliant. Is it on all the different platforms? You got the audio and everything out, right? So it's on Apple, Spotify, and all that.
It sure is.
I'm gonna share your links if you don't mind. And
please do.
I'm telling all y'all motherfuckers out there now to listen to the show. I need y'all all to do this. As soon as y'all turn this podcast off, go to Netflix and check out Y'all Want to Hear Something Crazy. Because Miss Pat cuts a fool. And she says some real shit. And you say some real shit. It's relevant. If you look at what you're doing, Pat, you can learn from your shit.
Right.
I try to teach them. I try to open people's minds. You know, like even when they, at the end, when I talk about having a gay daughter and say, I can joke about it, but can't nobody else. And the reason why I did that bit is because so many people, especially Black America, it's one of the things we was raised up to think if you was gay, something was wrong with you. Mm-hmm. I tell my daughter, eat all the pussy she want to eat. Just use paperware when you come to my house. That's your mouth. I ain't going to stop you from eating no pussy because I don't want you to stop me from sucking no dick if that's what I choose to do. You know what I'm saying? That's your motherfucking mouth. I support whatever you want to swallow, as long as I ain't got to swallow it. Yeah. And so I've always been a supporter of her gayism. And she, I just say, I'm just thankful you're not the stud bitch because we look just alike. And I was glad you look like a girl. You ain't out here looking like me as a boy. But other than that, eat the pussy. It's your pussy to eat.
Yeah, and I think, you know what? I would like to say that we getting better as Black America with dealing with other people and their choices. Because for one, it never bothered me on who another motherfucker was sleeping with. I don't give a damn. So I ain't never been no homophobic cat or nothing like that. And I look at some of the homies that act like they had a problem with gay people. And I would say, look, man, you act like you got some secret tendencies or something. You being bothered by that a little too much. That man not bothering us.
Exactly. And it's usually the motherfuckers who are bothering the most is deep down in them, and they don't want to look at it because they know that's who they really are. Don't put that on the Bible. That's who you really are if somebody else's sexuality is bothering you. It's like a motherfucker, I don't give a fuck if you walk down the street and you done fucking cut your hair into a rooster hairstyle and it's different color and everybody think you great. Nigga, you paid for that shit. That's your shit. If you can walk around like a rooster all the fuck you want, I won't look like no motherfucking rooster, but I ain't gonna knock you from looking like no motherfucking rooster. All I say, bitches, don't turn into a real chicken and we gotta eat you. That's
all. Well, Miss Pat, I know it's late over here, late over where you at.
Yes, it is.
And we really appreciate you coming on. Like I said, yeah, you're one of my favorites. I can't wait till you hit California. But like I said, I'm going to be your neighbor in about three or four more months. So I'm going to be at all your shows and shit like that.
Well, I appreciate you.
And I'm going to be saying, remember, I'm the nigga that did the podcast. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to come out there and support you.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me. Honestly, make sure y'all check out my show, Miss Pat Show, on BET Plus, and it's on Paramount. So, and we're working on the second season as I speak.
For sure. We look forward to that. We look forward to that, Miss Pat. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have a good night. Bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Well, that concludes another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. Be sure to download the iHeart app and subscribe to the Gangsta Chronicles podcast. For Apple users, find that purple mic on the front screen of your phone, subscribe to the show, leave a comment and a rating. Executive producers for the Gangsta Chronicles are Norm Steele, James McDonald, and Aaron MCA Taylor. Our visual media director is Brian Wyatt. The show's audio editor is Taylor Hayes. The Gangsta Chronicles is a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia. Any questions or comments, hit us up. TheGangstaChroniclesPodcast@gmail.com. Peace. Be safe out there.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.